As long as there has been an imperialist occupation of Ireland, there have been movements of resistance. At this critical point in Republican history, we talk to a sample of Republican voices about where the movement is, how it got here, and where it is going. To go back to the beginning, Dan Keating, a 105-year-old member of Republican Sinn Féin, a veteran of the Irish War of Independence and Civil War, and who was also interned in the Curtha camp during the Second World War.
Okay. So you were interned first of all during the 20s, but it's mostly your internment during the 40s?
I was interned in the 20s first.
Yeah.
I was captured up in Tipperary, and I was conveyed to Mountjoy, and we burned the jail. And we slept in the cells for some time, but we were transferred in to the Curra internment camp.
And then you were back in the Curra then during the 40s, wasn't it?
In 1939.
Yeah. And had the camp...
In 1939, I was at a funeral, Jack McNeely. Died in hunger strike, he was buried in Mayo. And on our way back, we heard that Tony D'Arcy had died also in hunger strike. And we were held up on the way coming back in Mullingar, but the police let us walk around the place, and I saw a chance, I walked away off. And I got away for a good bit then, but some months after, again, I was captured down in Tipperary in Carrigans of Knocklofty. Parole, most people got parole. But at the time, now in 1942, when it broke, about what happened in Tipperary, you know, and the sellout there by Stephen Hayes. My father died, I applied for parole, and I knew too much about what happened in Tipperary, and they refused me point blank for parole.
Do you think there's a possibility that the present people, like Adams and those, that they could end up interning Republicans?
No doubt
again.
Whatever about it.
You think that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Adams is gone. Adams, one way maybe he surprised me to go, you know. But I was definitely not surprised about McGuinness at all.
Yeah.
McGuinness was always a milk and water man. When the campaign was on in 1938 and 39, them years, now
yes.
You know. Dominic Adams was over there, he was in charge, he was staying in a house in Bristol.
Yeah.
He was married at the time, his girlfriend was there as well, I think she was married in Ireland. I was there anyway, and I went out, there was three of us went out anyway, with bombs to lay them out, and we done that, and we had a safe house where we could go in London as well, and I happened to go back 2 days after to Bristol again. And I was walking up the road, and I saw all the activity across the road. Adams and Margaret Nolan, Jimmy O'Neill, and another one that was there at the time, they bailed out and made no effort whatsoever to contact them. One of the three of us that was out in the night now, Terry Perry, he walked right into him and they almost killed him. He died in prison a short time after.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they made no effort to contact us.
No.
Then it must be said, you have all kinds of so-called agreements. When I hear the Good Friday agreement, it sickens me. It solves nothing. Until the people of the 32 counties of Ireland sit down without any interference from anyone and elect a parliament for the 32 counties, you'll have peace then, but not in then. In every generation that comes on, same as the past, you'll have people that will rise up against the injustice of partition. As it stands at present, 10% of the people of Ireland are holding down a large part of the northern side of our country for England. And until that ceases, you'll never have real peace in Ireland. You can't have two countries in Ireland. Tis one.
Arise, you workers from your slumber. Arise, ye prisoners of war.
After the 1970 Irish Ulster, the Republican movement split into two camps, Provisional Sinn Féin on the one hand, with Official Sinn Féin on the other. Both these movements in the later years would experience their own splits, with Republican Sinn Féin breaking away from the Provisionals, with the Irish Republican Socialist Party breaking away from Official Sinn Féin. Official Sinn Féin would later become the Workers' Party. We now have Pádraig Mannion, a member of the Central Executive Committee of the Workers' Party, sharing his views.
Hey, Pádraig Mannion, the research officer with the Workers' Party. How did you get involved with Republican politics?
I got involved in the mid-70s, and there were a number of very burning issues, important issues, at that time. Obviously, though, the situation in the North was ongoing, but pretty like at the end of that situation, for example, the Vietnam War, the war in Cambodia, was coming to an end, the international situation in the Portuguese colonies, Angola, Mozambique, major changes going on over there. But also in Ireland, there were some huge developments, major campaigns about our natural resources. The resources protection campaign was involved, and the whole change in developments that were taking place with the introduction of multinationals, what that was doing to the country at that time. So there was a huge number of different issues going on at that time, and one of the issues that has lasted from the mid-70s when I got involved first until now has been the issue of housing for our people, speculation and robbery of people. Buying houses was an issue back in 1974 and it's still an issue in 2007.
Okay. And did you get involved first with Provisional Sinn Féin as they are today, or were you always a member of Official Sinn Féin in the Workers' Party?
No, I never had anything to do with Provisional Sinn Féin. I, even at that early stage, rejected their sectarian view of society. I didn't believe then, and I don't believe now, that you can build a society based on dividing people along religious grounds. I don't think you can build a society built on triumphalism, on one religious view of the world or another. I believed then, and I believe now, that political division and political development is along class lines, that what unites people and divides people isn't their religion, it's whether or not they are being exploited or whether they are benefiting from people being exploited, and it doesn't make any difference whether one is Catholic, Protestant, Dissenter, Muslim, Jew or Buddhist. Society in every country is divided along those lines. So therefore, from the beginning of my involvement in politics, I rejected a sectarian viewpoint of the world.
Looking back at the 70s and Vietnam, and Cuba and Che Guevara and the student uprisings in lots of cities, and you take into account could you say there was the seed of a social revolution in Ireland?
I think there was certainly the seed of more progressive change and more progressive political development. I think the idea of a social revolution in Ireland looking at the population structure and the education structure and the mix would have been very, very difficult in the sense that you still had the physical but also the whole structural power, for example, of the churches, the Catholic Church down here, the Church of Ireland and the Anglican and the Presbyterian churches in the north. You had a very agrarian, settled society. Now you had also, like, within that you had huge tensions. You had huge problems with unemployment, you had huge problems with bad housing, you had huge problems with divisions between rich and poor. So certainly I think a lot more emphasis would have gone on to those divisions, and huge amounts of energy that were wasted in the whole northern struggle, so-called, and which were diverted into a situation which has brought no developments that couldn't have been achieved much easier and much sooner. I think did divide people and did slow things down, and has led, I think, even here to a situation that whereas the overt power of the Catholic Church has been removed, I think we've forgotten that the Church still has huge power. For example, they still control all of education.
The early years of Fianna Fáil were pretty bloody, and then you had the breakaway of the INLA, and then on through the 70s and up until the 80s when the democratic left broke away. What, in your opinion, would have been the successes and failures of Fianna Fáil? How could things have been organised differently? It wouldn't have been such an internal sort of left Republican civil war in up to 67 or 76.
Well, you think after 70, you still had people in the Republican movement in the officials, especially around Seamus Costello, who thought that they were going to carry on, like, sort of, who had a completely different view as to what was going to happen, and who sort of had the view that, I mean, there was sort of a national liberation struggle, a sort of national liberation strategy, and that really, it's a bit like Jerry Morrison's, I suppose, view 20 years later, that you could go forward with an annihilation in one hand and a ballot box in the other hand, whereas obviously at that stage the provost just thought you should have an armory in one hand and an armory in the other hand. Now they've gone on to the situation where you should have a ballot paper in both hands.
What would your views on Sinn Féin's so-called socialism be?
Well, I think it's interesting. I'm not a computer buff. I'm stuck with them, as we all are. But a friend of mine recently, who is into all this computer business, did a search on the Sinn Féin website for the word socialism, and their home site, and I'm leaving out the links, and his report back to me was that it's not mentioned on their website, that they don't see themselves any longer as a socialist party, if they ever did. I certainly don't think the leadership ever saw themselves as socialists. I think basically what they are really sort of, there's very little difference between themselves and Fianna Fáil. You know, because some of their people have been through obviously rough times, and they have maybe a more idealistic and more view of a better society, a view of improved working conditions and whatever else. But I think as a party, they're not a socialist party. They will revert to type. They will become a populist right-wing party. What they started out as, to an extent, the cynical always referred to the provisionals as Fianna Fáil with guns. And that's what essentially they were. And you know, their political home, it really is in a more invigorated, radicalised Fianna Fáil. So I think they'll quite happily be political partners with Fianna Fáil. And if the numbers pan out after this election, that the only possible way Fianna Fáil can go into government is with an alliance with Sinn Féin, then they will go into government in an alliance with Sinn Féin.
For many Republicans, the final straw was the Good Friday Agreement of 1998. James McFarren, a former Sinn Féin organiser from Cork, now a member of the Worker Solidarity Movement, speaks to us on why he thinks republicanism is a dead-end ideology and why we need a social revolution.
Well, I joined Sinn Féin in 1984, and at that time, in Cork certainly, the perception of people like me was that where struggle existed was within the Republican movement, that they seemed to be the premier movement of struggle in the country. And if you're involved in radical politics in Cork, that was the big attraction. I was 16 years of age. Sinn Féin seemed to be involved in a lot of social campaigns and the national question. And the specific event that spurred me to join Sinn Féin, or the time that I joined, was after reading Gerry Adams' Ardagh speech. He'd just been made party president the previous year, and this was his first address where he talked about socialism and separatism and feminism and internationalism. All very positive things that sounded to me, and I joined on that basis and became active in the party in the 80s. I was always very much of the left, you know. I was a socialist republican. That's the term, I suppose, that we'd have always used in those days. We wouldn't have seen ourselves, or I certainly didn't see myself, as a nationalist. The party was evolving obviously rapidly in that period. It had a big surge in membership in the early 80s, and the Adams leadership were taking in a particular direction. People like me believed it was being taken in a socialist direction, and for a period that seemed to be the case. In the late 80s and the early 90s, though, it was quite obvious that there was being a shift. There were some quite notable events that occurred during that period. In the anti-extradition campaign, for example, where we'd always been pushing a very hard line in Cork and other areas, an anti-Fianna Fáil line, we were kind of urged to soften that. There were occasions when demonstrations, like after Desi Ellis was extradited from Dublin, there was a march planned for the city centre, and Adams came and cancelled that march to avoid a confrontation with state forces. There were little straws in the wind, if you like, and obviously during that entire period there had been negotiations going on that nobody knew about. And the first thing that really happened was that when the Hume Adams document or issue became public, there was a whole period where lots of stuff that people didn't realise was going on became public. And within the movement there was quite a strong and fairly wordy debate going on between the various factions. But people in a hierarchical organization, in a Leninist organization, you tend to trust the leadership to a certain extent and you obey discipline. And that's why outside of it you very rarely saw that internal debate that was occurring. When it got to the point of the late 90s and the negotiations and that, and we were heading for an agreement, it was very clear to me and other people on the left in Sinn Féin that the agreement that was envisaged was going to fall quite short of anything that could be used as a platform to build towards the Workers' Republic, which we'd have seen as our objective. So we argued against the agreement within the party. A lot of people submitted to it and agreed to it, who later regretted it or whatever. But in any case, it came to a head at the 98 Ardagh for me, and when the party decided to back the agreement, I felt that my place within the struggle was no longer within Sinn Féin. I felt it was no longer fighting really for what I was interested in. I'd made the arguments, I'd fought my corner. Sinn Féin and Cork actually was one of the only areas in the country that voted en bloc against the agreement. So about 2 weeks after the Ardagh, I resigned from the party and became an independent left activist.
Every Republican group has had an armed wing. What do you think of armed struggle republicanism? Could it ever actually lead to a 32 county socialist republic?
No, I don't think so. I think that an armed victory over the British state was impossible. I think it could only have been done in conjunction with a social revolution, and really a social revolution is what it will take to defeat imperialism and capitalism in this country. That's not going to come out of republicanism. There are probably elements within republicanism who can be part of that, but currently no, that's not going to happen. In terms of armed struggle, I'm not a pacifist, and I believe a resort to arms is a right of us as a class, but it's not something that should be taken lightly. It's a big step to take, and the pitfalls are huge. So in the absence of any sort of mass movement for socialism, for social revolution here, I think the idea of armed actions would be a little bit crazy, quite honestly. Yeah.
In Easter 2006, the formation of a new group comprising of former Sinn Féin activists and assorted Republicans was announced. Calling themselves IRGLEAD, they have been involved in grassroots political organising since. We talked to Dottie McAvosh, a founding member of IRGLEAD.
Republican politics, to my mind, seeing that a part of Ireland was occupied, again, coming from an education that wouldn't have been very nationalistic or Republican, certainly wouldn't have been socialist, but I had a very deep understanding at an early age of a history of conflict in Ireland, and felt drawn to the most immediate way to respond to the injustices I saw, which was the removal of British troops from Ireland and the establishment, or the re-establishment I should say, of an independent dispensation or a state of peace and a lack of conflict and so on. So that's my initial involvement was really from that perspective. But yeah, of course, as time went on, the earlier punk and radical sort of social libertarian, if I may say, influences sort of came back, and both of them tended to fuse with one another. The national, the resistance to occupation, the resistance to oppression, to the use of armed force against a people as a group based upon their nationality and in some respects their religion, although I never would have had any affinity with religion, blended with an understanding that really all of this was about power and about social power and how people lived and existed. So I was drawn to it, as opposed to in many respects. I've always felt I never had a choice but to get involved in politics. From the very outset, and we're very influenced, of course, by our experiences in other organisations, IRGLEAD has been absolutely and utterly of a mind to make the organisation as democratic as is possible. And I'll just give you, I think, to give one example of that to prove the point. And of course, nothing is perfect, and we will have to modify and review things as we go along. We have what's known as an Ard Círchle, which in effect is the equivalent of a national conference. At the moment, we have it once every month to reflect their size, but not only to reflect their size, to reflect the fact that everybody should be coming together as often as is possible. That mightn't be practical in the future. Chances are it won't be, for different reasons, and we may have to look at that. But I'll just give you an example of how that functions. On questions of major strategic importance, decisions of major strategic importance, any one member of IRGLEAD who is entitled to attend and vote, any one member of IRGLEAD can put their hand up and object to any proposal that is of strategic significance and importance, a decision of strategic importance. Any one member can put their hand up and block that. In effect, every member has a veto. Now, that's not to say that every member has a permanent veto, because the organisation will be crippled. However, trying to err on the side of democracy, we have factored that in, i.e. that no person will feel that somehow there were meetings beforehand or their voice isn't being taken into consideration. That one person can in effect have a veto on a decision, and that allows them the space then to try and convince people of the fallacy of what they have proposed and so on and so forth. So to my mind, that is very significant. Even the name of the Círchle, and for those who aren't Gaelic or who don't speak Irish, a Círchle is a circle in effect, and even that word we tried to, you know, to it symbolises to us certainly inclusivity, lack of hierarchy, and almost that all people are contained within it and all people are equal within it. It's also used in deference to the Fenian movement, who used the word Círchle to describe their branches, and it's also importantly and significantly to us in deference to the Bolivarian movement and the Bolivarian circles in Venezuela and their practice of worker democracy, or at least their attempts and the movement in that direction of a deepened democracy and so on.
You said the other day during your talk, which we attended, that you had doubts about Sinn Féin going back as far as 1994. Obviously this led ultimately 12 years later to you joining a separate group, or helping to form a separate group.
Sure, again, in 12 years a lot happens and politics change and we develop hopefully and they evolve, but I certainly am on record amongst my comrades, present comrades and comrades past, that I had certainly deep reservations, my first involvement almost. That's not to say that other people didn't see the fact that the the road and the process that people had set out before them was going to be difficult. There wouldn't be one person of a Republican mind who wouldn't have acknowledged that. But I certainly did have personally very, very, very deep reservations to start, for the simple fact that the Republican movement as it was embarking upon a very new strategy, okay, that hadn't been tried and tested before by that organisation, but yeah, had a huge amount of historical precedence of Republican organisations, militant Republican organisations, almost entering the enemy's arena, the enemy's territory, that of parliamentary politics, of power politics. And from the very start I felt that was a hugely dangerous thing to do, for a number of reasons. I thought it was a very hugely dangerous thing to do, to jump from one tactic, that of in effect armed struggle, not armed struggle to the exclusion of politics, but primarily a strategy based upon armed force, to one based upon parliamentary politics and engagement. My, even at that point, and I was still a very young person, was very much of the opinion that we should have returned almost to the ground, returned almost to the community, to allow the space created by the cessation of armed operations, to allow that space to grow, for us to make connections with people on the ground, to build a movement that would help us meet our objectives peacefully, democratically. I found and I thought that that organisation was far too hasty and rushing headlong into an engagement with people who are past masters at deception, at neutralising resistance and almost accommodating people into the system. As long as there's partition, as long as there's occupation, as long, more importantly than that, as long as there is social division, social inequality, as long as we live in a neoliberal capitalist democracy, as long as that is a fact, there will be need for an alternative to it. Okay, Irish republicanism has a long, long, long history of resistance to occupation, resistance to social injustice, and so on and so forth. As long as both sides of that great injustice exist, there will be a need for a socialist republican alternative to it. We are very confident that, for our part, we are certainly going to work as hard as we can to bring about the establishment of a movement from the bottom up, based upon empowerment of people and so on and so forth, that will be sufficiently strong to demand that our objectives are met. So we will be very confident of the future of republicanism, or socialist republicanism, in the 21st century. Certainly there is a need for it. As long as the objectives of socialist republicanism aren't met, there will be a need for that movement. And we will be very confident of the part that we will play in that.